I call the Workforce Development Committee to order. Quorum, Mr. President, we have two sets of minutes to approve today. Representative Hassan, would you like to move minutes for the February 15th meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hassan moves approval of the minutes from February 15th, 2023. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Next, Representative Baker, would you like to move approval for the March 1st minutes?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair, as presented.
All right. Representative Baker moves approval of the minutes for March 1st. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. First up today is Chair Hassan, House File 457. Avivo funding provided. So the chair moves that House File 457 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Hassan, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know it's Friday morning, 8:30 a.m. Not my ideal time to be here, but we are here. House File 457 is the funding for Avivo for their workforce training. Avivo is a nonprofit in my district and also serves greater Minnesota. It's an organization that increases the well-being of individuals by pairing chemical health and mental health services with career, education, training, and employment services to help folks achieve recovery, employment, and career services. And they have been serving the Twin Cities and greater Minnesota since the 1960s. Avivo serves nearly 13,000 individuals and their children each year and helps 2,000 people enter the employment that leads to careers, including helping 1,500 people move out of welfare each year. They serve individuals and families who face the largest disparities and barriers to employment, health, homelessness, mental illness, substance use disorder, chronic unemployment, and poverty. I used to work for Hennepin County as a social worker, and the worst thing that you can do to somebody who's struggling with mental illness is just being idle and sitting at home. People have to have hope that they can get better and they can be part of society. And being part of society is getting up in the morning and having a purpose and either going to a workforce training or a job or some purpose that at the end of the day that you feel fulfilled. Avivo is asking $650,000 in the fiscal year 2024 and then $650,000 in the fiscal year 2025 from the general fund in order to increase the people that they serve. As we know, the last few years have been very unpredictable, and the number of people who are struggling with mental health issues and addiction has skyrocketed. So I will say that this is much needed services, and we have the executive director with us here and also somebody who has received services from Avivo to just walk us through the need for this ask. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. To your testifiers, first up is Kelly Matter, President and CEO of Avivo. Can you please state your name and continue with your testimony?
Yes. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for your very kind introduction and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Matter. I am the President and CEO of Avivo. And thank you so much for inviting us to testify before you today. As Representative Hassan said, we are a 60-year-old organization absolutely rooted in our community and providing services across 17 counties in Minnesota. I am here to talk about the Avivo Institute for Career and Technology and the outcomes, but we do also provide emergency housing and housing supports to over 1,100 people. We are a substance use and mental health treatment, residential, outpatient, and community provider, and we do help about 3,000 people get many times their first job each year, but also career advancement. And the Avivo Institute for Career and Technical Education is developed with and for businesses. We design curriculum that meets the demand of our local economy. Those programs change over time. We've got some exciting new green energy programs that we're doing in North Minneapolis with the Renewable Energy Partnership around solar energy and green HVAC and a new telecom program. One of our long-term programs, though, has been our IT training program, and excited for you to meet Takira in just a minute. As Representative Hassan said, the last 3 years have been the hardest I've ever seen in my over 30-year career of doing this work. The acuity of addiction and the acuity of mental illness has been like we've never seen before. I was just sharing with Representative Baker, 2 days ago we reversed three overdoses on our campus. And we would do that three in 3 years maybe. At the Avivo Village shelter, we've reversed over 140 overdoses. People are struggling. We see them struggling in the next couple years as well. And hope is essential to people, transforming their lives and having a career path to focus on the right service at the right time is a difference maker. And Takira will be able to talk more about that. Because of the difficult, past several years, this work is never easy, but it has been made more difficult for individuals we're serving, and the ability to maybe go from homelessness, substance use disorder, to training and employment, it takes more than a year of a person's time, and we want to be there for as long as it takes. We want to be exclusively inclusive, zero exclusion in the work that we do, and that means that we welcome people into the Institute and all of our programs who traditionally may not be seen as job ready, but everyone can be job ready, and everyone that wants to work can work, and the Avivo Institute is a big part of that. And it takes unique funding like we are seeking that doesn't just fit neatly in a one-year path to get someone from zero to 60, if you will. So that's what brings us before your committee today. We are extremely appreciative of your listening ear and the past support that we've received as well. I don't want to spend more time talking when you get the opportunity to meet Takira Lawrence. I'm not going to steal any of her thunder, but she is a recent graduate and she has some credentials behind her name now, and she's got some exciting news that I'm also excited about. With that, I will turn testimony over to Takira Lawrence, but be available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Takira Lawrence, I invite you to take the stand, and please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Good morning. Sorry. This mic's very soft. Okay. Good morning, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Takira Lawrence. My relationship with Avivo started almost exactly a year ago on March 3rd. I went into the Institute having not worked in about 3 years, not really knowing what I was going to do with my life because I had some health complications that made me need to change careers. And being involved with Avivo has completely changed my life in this 1 year span, which is amazing that she was talking about 1 year. In 1 year, I managed to graduate from the IT support program, and also within the IT support program, there's an office support specialist program. So you pretty much get two educations in one when you go through the IT support program, and it enabled me to apply for a position at Avivo, which I interviewed for this week and was offered a job and accepted happily. So in 1 year's time, I went from being unemployed and confused to having a new job and looking forward to the rest of my life. Other aspects of Avivo are important to me as well because I am currently experiencing homelessness and I'm currently diagnosed as bipolar. So
even though I don't work with every aspect of VIVO, all of it is important to me because it touches me personally. And so I just really hope that this could go through.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. Next, I'll ask anybody in the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill. All right, we will go to member discussion. Representative Baker, you have the first question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think over the years, and this is maybe just a message for our newest members here, is that you get your special groups, the ones that you want to work with the most. And I always look forward to hearing our stories from Aviva. I have been over to their campus a couple different times. And being as involved in the substance use disorder world that I am, and hearing Takira's message today, she may not need all the services, but she needs a couple of them. And they're touching her in that way. And congratulations on a good year. And that's good, because people need to have that, and they need to see that beautiful smile. And let me tell you this. Kelly Matter, when she walks around with you, and if you do a tour, and if you're able to do a tour of Aviva, please do that. She has so many people that come up to her because they literally love her, and she knows who they are. It's moms with the babies running around. It is a great place, and it's a great place of hope. Kelly is a great leader, and we need to support this organization. Every time we have done this, and I usually get over there about every few years, it is doing a magic stuff. So I can't thank you enough for keeping with this mission, Kelly. And Representative Hassan, thank you for bringing it. This is a bill that I'm always proud to very much support, and so just keep doing it. It's really good stuff, so thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much for your comments, Representative Baker. Any other questions or comments for the testifier? Oh, Representative Elizabeth.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Hassan. I'm just thrilled to learn of this and to see this. I wish we had it in northern Minnesota, a model like this. So, you know, I look forward to coming to see it and tour it. And it's hope is just the critical link for everybody. And so seeing pathways for people to get the mental health issues are just rampant right now. And they were always there, and they always will be there. But I think we have specific issues related to this pandemic that we have to help people in a different way. And so I'm just thrilled for you, and congratulations, and look forward to seeing your campus. Thanks.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions, comments for the author?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for the comments, Rep. Baker and Rep. Selesnikar. Did I get it right? Oh, awesome. I do invite everyone to come and visit, and I would love, you know, to arrange that with Kelly. It's a wonderful space to be. I have done the tour how many times? I don't know.
Many
times. It's always great to see not only individuals but also families receiving services in this space, and just the amount of, you know, hope and healing that happens in this space. So I just ask for your support. It's a great bill. It's a great cause. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much, Chair Hassan. And the chair renews my motion that House File 457 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, now we're going to go back to our original schedule.
Can I just stay here and finish mine? Or do we? It's up to you guys.
Representative Sister has to get to another committee.
Okay, that's all right then.
I'm sorry about that.
Y'all are gonna move me around like that?
Yep, get nursed. Representative Sister Mira,
it's fine.
House File 576 is up next. And I will move that House File 576 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Sister Mira, please explain your bill.
Great, thank you. Good morning, committee members. I am honored to be here today to talk about House File 576. And I'm going to have a few people come up with me. So this is a bill to appropriate funding for new American workforce training provided by the International Institute of Minnesota. The International Institute of Minnesota is located on Como Avenue in St. Paul, across from the State Fair. And the Institute has been welcoming new Americans to our community for more than 100 years. The Institute helps new Americans, refugees, and immigrants actualize their talents and ambitions through high-quality education and employment programs, immigration services, and refugee resettlement supporting new arrivals to our community. In the last year, the Institute welcomed over 400 Afghan and Ukrainian arrivals by finding housing, employment, and ongoing critical services that help new Americans have a strong start to their lives in Minnesota. The Institute's medical career pathways was recognized by the Department of Labor under the Obama administration on their top 10 workforce training programs in the United States. Healthcare and other employers rely on Institute graduates who are hardworking and committed employees who are providing valuable health care at all levels in our community. You know, and I will just say that I really do believe that, you know, the way that Minnesota has both welcomed immigrants and refugees and had our communities enriched by immigrants and refugees is one of the things that I think makes our state great. And we know that people need support coming here, coming into the workforce, you know. I think particularly their work in the last year supporting Ukrainian arrivals, which is, I know, an issue that has gotten, you know, supporting Ukraine and supporting Ukrainian refugees is something that has gotten bipartisan support within this body. So I'm excited to now turn it over to our testifiers to just talk more about the work that they are doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. We'll go to the first testifier, Jane Grotman, Executive Director of the International Institute of Minnesota. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, Vice Chair Brand, and thank you, Representative Sensenmura, for authoring our bill and members of the committee. I'm Jane Grotman. I'm the Executive Director of the International Institute of Minnesota. Right, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify this morning. The International Institute of Minnesota's mission is to help new Americans achieve self-sufficiency, but also to be get full membership in American life in Minnesota. So since 1919, the Institute has delivered very critical services to help new Americans realize their ambitions in their transitions to a new life in Minnesota. So House File 576 will support the International Institute's medical careers pathway that will help new Americans reach their entry-level position in healthcare, but then advance into higher-paying positions that actually can really stabilize and support their families. The Institute's medical careers pathway has trained and employed over 3,100 healthcare workers in 135 different healthcare institutions in our community, both in hospitals and long-term care centers. So since 2000, 2,500 nursing assistants have been employed, and 667 pathway students have advanced their careers, and the majority of them have become two-year and four-year RNs. The others have become other advanced positions in healthcare. The current average wage for college degree RNs, so four-year RNs, is $45 per hour, which is really a wage that you can begin to sustain and support your family. Also, Institute graduates have a very impressive retention rate. Nursing assistant graduates from the Institute have over a 90% one-year retention rate, which is remarkable in an industry that has a very high turnover rate. And our nurse graduates have almost 100% retention rate at year one. So new Americans not only get employed in healthcare, but they're loyal to their employers. So from 2016 to 2017, I just want to say I think it's really an important statistic for people to know that 97% of the new workers in our state, in Minnesota's labor force, were immigrants. 97% of the new workers in our state were immigrants. So this is data published by the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. So new Americans are critical to the economic vitality of our state and to the future labor market of our state. So we want to make sure that the folks that come through our doors at the International Institute of Minnesota, many of whom have had two decades of their life robbed through no fault of their own, that they move very swiftly and seamlessly through training programs at our space, but also in higher education, so that they can get to the advanced degrees that they are able to earn. It's very, very important. So that's a big part of the work that we do. And so the investment that we're asking you to make is going to help more new Americans move into healthcare labor force, where their talents and their devotion to this field are desperately needed, as you all know. So now it's my pleasure first, thank you for the opportunity to testify. And it's my pleasure to now pass the floor to one of our program graduates, Ayan Awari.
Ayan Awari, please take the stand and give your testimony, but please first state your name for the record.
Thank you, Jane. Good morning. Good morning, First Chair Brown and committee member. My name is Ayan Awari. I'm sorry, this is the first time I'm speaking in front of the people. I'm very shaken, but I'm so sorry about that. My name is Ayan Awari. I'm from Somalia. I come from America 2005. I'm a registered nurse. I'm new registered nurse. And also, I'm Kalan of the International Institute since 2017. I know I'm shaking, but I came from Africa in 2005 with knowing no English very well, but I'm graduated for 4 years college, 4 years high school and went to college. The International Institute is very program, good program, because they gonna bring us people like me. Because I'm from Africa, I didn't know the language, but the way I am today, the International Institute make me who I am today. Because I'm start for the certified nursing assistant and I become registered nurse. The International Institute is very good program because they're going to build in us our career. And I went to the 2 years for nurse, for RN, because they make us like who I am today. And I'm so glad like I'm part of International Institute. You can understand when you come to another country, it's very difficult. Their language is very hard to, you know, to come like the where I am today. I'm so glad, and I have 4 children. It's very difficult without International Institute. It's very difficult to me to raise my children and also go to the community college and to become RN. The International Institute support me a lot of things, like childcare grant, scholarship, all those stuff. I'm very grateful for the part of this program. And I'm gonna send this message for the new immigrant who wanna become like me to go in opportunity, to get opportunity like to go to the high, to get high degree. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
You're doing great.
Like I'm, for example, like immigrant people who's coming this country, they can be wherever they wanna be to be. Because, for example, me, I'm from Africa, and I grew up a refugee camp. It's hard for me like to become RN, but that's the make us like this program, because they're gonna like trying us to get good career, and then helping the American people. For example, for the elderly people who need the most help. The other things I'm going to add from this program, they have it, because everything we need to give up, like, for example, people like me, they wanted to give up easily. But International Institute from broke, they're going to say to us, no, you can do it. So do it. And this, like, this that makes us to be strong. Thank you very much, and thanks for the opportunity to speak with you. I'm so sorry about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wari.
And I hope you support the International Institute, because they're going to bring us people like me. And then I'm very glad like, to listen in our business. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your testimony and showing your bravery, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other members of the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? All right, we're going to go to member testimony next. Up first is Chair Becca Finn.
Thank you, Chair Brand, and I can't say enough good things about the International Institute. It's really been a privilege to get to know some of the folks who do the work there at not far from my district, and had really the privilege early on as a legislator several years ago to tour and get to know some folks and meet the people who benefit from these programs. And this is exactly the type of thing that we should be funding. To me, this is actually not even that big of an ask for what is accomplished here, because not only are we helping people to be self-supporting and support their families with like really legitimate, well-paying careers. But these are also the jobs where we can't find employees otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so these are the workers of our future. And, you know, we talked a lot about the medical career pathways, but there's also a hospitality career pathway, which is also really needed. I'm sure Representative Baker will have something to say about that too, but it just is the way that they do the programming and have things on site, and it's easy to access as far as public transportation. It's just all of the things are happening at the International Institute, and I just encourage others, if you have not visited, to visit them. I haven't even actually visited again since you expanded and reopened, but I will definitely be getting over there soon. And I was able to also bring the Lieutenant Governor to check out what they're doing there as well. So this is, I'm really enthusiastic about this. I'm sure Representative Sensenmura, if you would have known how much I love them, you would have asked me to sign on earlier, but I just did while I was sitting here. So I really appreciate this bill especially, and I want to thank our testifier. You did a great job, and I really wish you the best, and I'm so glad that you were able to find help at the International Institute. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next on the list is Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Rep. Sensenmura, for this bill. Thank you. Is it Ayan?
Ayan.
Thank you very much. You did great. You felt nervous, but we didn't sense that. As somebody who came to this country in early 90s, started in a place called Jacksonville, Florida, where nobody looked like me, and they did not had International Institute to help. I'm very grateful for the work that you guys are doing. Coming to a new country is scary. It is hard. It's not only the language barrier, it's the cultural barrier. I came here as a little kid, 10 or 11 years old. I came from a world where everybody was black. A continent, actually, where everybody was black. I came to a world where everybody was white. And my fascination with blonde hair, I remember at the airport asking my mom, why does everybody have white hair? And my mom was like, shut up. Don't say anything. But I'm sharing this. Lutheran Social Services, two ladies from Lutheran Social Services picked us up from the airport. And I'm like, who are they? And why are they helping us? Strangers. But there were no programs. There were no programs to help my mom. There were no programs to help my older siblings. I think they paid for our rent for 3 months, and they're like, in that 3 months, you gotta find a job. This is the American dream. So this is, within 3 months of not knowing the language, the culture, not even knowing how to ride a bus, we were supposed to, like my family, I was the kid, but the rest of my family members were supposed to find a job and pay for things. So I'm grateful for the work that you're doing, and I'm glad that people like Ayan and others can find support. And it's not only financial support, but also the emotional support that there are others who care about you, who want to help you, who can give you what you need. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Next on the list is Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, and again, Ayan, very good job. Mahatsanid. I am so grateful for what you're doing and how you're doing it and for telling your story. I know it's not easy to be there, and it's a lot of things happening, but actually I have a question for Ms. Gelman. I think, and as an employer out in Wilmer, I actually have a couple of fabulous Somalian housekeepers that are doing a wonderful job. I was a big struggle to how do I reach out to them. I didn't quite know. The only word I know is Mahatsanid. That's about it. So I don't know that. And so what is the secret to getting the partners that we need to get employers involved in hiring our new Americans? What is it that we can do as a state to help educate our employers who really want to hire new Americans but don't quite know how to do it? Do you have a system, a pathway? Is there something we can do to share what's working for you?
Ms. Bratman?
Yes, thank you for the question, Representative Baker. Very happy to have you come visit the Institute and learn more about our hospitality's pathway. I mean, now is a great time to onboard employers because there's such demand and they really need employees. So, but in addition to that, I know that there is adult basic education services in Wilmer, and those are great organizations that can help with some of the cultural training for employers that employers often need. And I know there's some other good employment work happening in Wilmer, so it'd be good to connect with those folks too, but certainly welcome you to come and visit with our staff that are doing that work.
Thank you.
Yes.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a final comment. Again, I really do support this. I had to find myself hiring an interpreter just so that we could kind of get the ball rolling. And once it got going, they are very good with their English now, and it just takes some time to acclimate. And we are really working well, and they're loyal. They are loyal employees. They are there when we need them. And when they do need time off, whether it's for Ramadan or those, and we are very sensitive during that time of fasting. We have to be very careful about that. So it's just, it's a great way to get to know our newest Americans. And I will stop over there. I'm looking forward to a visit sometime. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Okay.
Next on the list is Representative Zalesnik.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'm just excited to see your presentation. And I think, is it Ian?
Ian.
Said it wrong. I'm sorry. To see your success story in the late 80s, mid-80s, I worked with a bunch of Somalians in the nursing home in the cities as a nursing assistant, and I didn't understand your language, and I'm quite sure they didn't understand what I was saying. I talked very fast. But we communicated and cared for seniors and cared for people. And so I'm just really happy to see the pathway program for healthcare, that you can get a pathway to whichever degree you want, nursing or anything else, and to start as a CNA. It's just a wonderful program that it sounds like you have. I'm wondering if you have it outside of the metro area. Is it in any other, this institute? Is it, do you place in other parts of Minnesota, in northern Minnesota, or met, you know, I'm just curious on that because it sounds like it's been very successful. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for the question, Representative. We don't do training outside of the state, with the exception of our college readiness work as part of our pathway, so really preparing people for the academic challenges of college so that when they get there, they go right into their credit-bearing courses that will count towards their graduation. So now some of those classes are online, so we are reaching quite a few people outstate. But we are thinking about how do we help people outstate with the training that we have. We're always careful about, you know, scaling our work because we don't want to lose what is working so well for us. But that is something that we're more and more interested in helping people outstate because we know there's a great need. I grew up in outstate Minnesota, and I know there's a great need. So definitely happy to talk to you about that.
Well, what, Representative?
Thank you, Chair and members. Yes, I would be excited to see that. I think that the hospitality industry and healthcare industry would love to see the institute be able to place people, and I realize there's issues of housing and the social support and creating a culture and creating that community partnership, but many love to go up the North Shore to visit, and I think that it's a great opportunity for people to live and find a lifestyle that if they had the right support system too, where success would follow. So yep. Encourage that opportunity, and maybe as legislative people we can find partnerships of successful programs and replicate it elsewhere. Thank you.
Any additional questions for the testifier? Representative, would you like to make any closing comments?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to thank the members, you know, for offering your words of support. I think especially from, you know, people who have immigrant and refugee experience and employers who really understand how important this kind of work is. You know, Representative Hassan, you know, mentioned kind of the American dream, and I think we hear this story often of someone comes to this country with $20 in their pocket and then, you know, ends up with a middle-class life. And there's a lot of steps that are missing from that story, right? And, you know, how do you learn the language? How do you learn the transportation system? How do you access social services? How do you get housing? You know, how do you really move into what I think International Institute is helping to support, which is, you know, moving into high-paying, you know, jobs that have opportunities for advancement. So I'm really supportive of this work. Ayan, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. It's really an inspiration to be able to hear about your journey, and I hope that the rest of the committee can support this for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. I think that, you know, my comment on this conversation that we had today, this kind of touches on another subject, I think, at our federal level, we all have to be asking our federal representatives to move forward on some actual immigration reform that will mean more opportunity for our workforce as well. So, the chair, I renew my motion to have House File 576 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up is a Representative Senator Mira, double feature, House File 1080. So nonprofit infrastructure grant program funding. Let's see here. I will move that House File 1080 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative, please explain your bill.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I'm happy to be here today to talk to you about House File 1080. This is an appropriation that I think has been before this committee before. I believe it was funded for the first time in 2019. And we are here to talk about support that we can give to the Minnesota nonprofits that are really vital to our state. So Minnesota nonprofits make up almost 14% of our economy, and our state is home to almost 9,000 nonprofit employers. Among them are many small nonprofits who play an outsized role in connecting ethnic minority populations who are often isolated or marginalized to culturally and linguistically needed services. When these organizations are strengthened, the communities they serve benefit from expanded services and support, and our state moves closer to reducing disparities in employment, education, and other areas. These nonprofits are job creators and developers, both as employers and as training ground for community members entering the workforce. Nonprofit organizations of all types and sizes are essential partners to local and state agencies and to our business community. But often, smaller nonprofits have a harder time than mainstream organizations in accessing a diverse pool of resources. So this bill, House File 1080, would appropriate $6 million to propel nonprofits, $3 million over each year of biennium. To propel nonprofits was an intermediary organization, which will then provide technical assistance and re-grant the funds in a competitive process to small, culturally specific nonprofits throughout our state. The Nonprofit Infrastructure Grant Program has been extremely successful. I am here along with recipients of the program to urge continued support of nonprofit organizations that serve historically underserved communities. And I want to just emphasize that these funds are for the purpose of re-granting through a competitive process. Current grant-making processes at the state level can often be challenging for smaller nonprofit organizations to access. Through this program, the selected grantees can use their funds to build their organization's infrastructure, strengthening their internal operations, scaling their programs to serve their people, and become stronger employers. I think that we're kind of having a conversation at the legislature just about kind of, you know, how are we making sure that we are doing the most good that we can with the dollars that we're giving out to the community, and how are we doing our due diligence about just making sure that all the organizations we're giving to have an impact. And I think that this program is a great way to kind of ensure that we're having that accountability, that we're offering organizations support, but that we're also really meeting the small nonprofits that, you know, don't necessarily know how to come and lobby the legislature, you know, don't necessarily know how to get in front of a committee, that we're making sure that we're getting the funds to those really critical nonprofits that do the on-the-ground work in our community. And I would now like to yield the rest of my time to testifiers who could tell us more about this program. Thank you.
Okay, to your testifiers, first up is Naima Farah. Please state your name and record and introduce the testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair Brandt and members of the committee, and to our House Chief Author, Representative Sansamara. My name is Naima Farah. I'm the Capacity Building Director at Propel Nonprofits, and I'm here to support House File 1080. Propel received appropriation from this state in 2017, 2019, and 2021 to create a grant program to build the capacity of small, culturally specific nonprofits. Today, I can report that the Nonprofit Infrastructure Grant Program is effective, and to ask for your support to continue investing in this effective program to reach more organizations across the state. Nonprofits play a vital role in the state, and small nonprofits play an immeasurable role in their communities. When the infrastructure of these organizations strengthens, the communities they serve benefit, and our state moves closer to reducing disparities. The 70 organizations supported through NIGB have reported significant workforce growth, community program expansion and community impact. Like other nonprofits, their services provide a social safety net and drive employment, community, and economic development. NIGB funding allows them to strengthen their organizational capacity and build their internal infrastructure systems. Demand for the program is high, and an expansion will have immediate impact. In three cycles, we have supported less than 20% of the 400 applicants we have received. This is a statewide program with 18% of both applicants and grantees awarded to Greater Minnesota nonprofits. Small nonprofits face barriers in accessing and managing grants with state agencies and need intensive technical assistance to gain knowledge and build their systems and policies. This program is a pathway to that readiness, and we are committed for responsibly stewarding state dollars and hold organizations in high standards for fiscal management, reporting, and policies. They consistently meet these standards. I want to reiterate that investing in strengthening nonprofit infrastructure is effective, and your support of this bill to expand this established program will benefit communities across the state. Thank you. And I will yield my time to introduce two of our grantees who will testify. First, Florence, Executive Director of Field of Dreams.
Thank you, Ms. Farah. Next up is Florence Wanda. Please state your name for the record. Continue with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Brandt and members of the committee. My name is Florence Wanda. I'm the co-founder of Field of Dreams Empowerment Center. It's a nonprofit located in Lakeville, Minnesota. We have been providing specialized and technical services to small businesses and sole proprietors since 2015. We discovered through our intake and interview process that the businesses we serve had challenges operating and running their ventures efficiently and effectively. The challenges are still real today, and these businesses are run and operated by individuals and families from the African immigrant community, Hispanic, Russian community, immigrant community throughout Dakota County, Ramsey, and Hennepin County. So we need this nonprofit infrastructure grant program because the communities we serve, they need our services. This grant has enabled us to expand our client base, grow our nonprofit, and secure funding that is vital to expanding our work. So the nonprofit infrastructure grant program has helped us to restructure our organizational practices and services in three impactful ways. With the help of this grant, we now have a robust financial and accounting system. We were able to secure and install software to help us streamline our financial, accounting, and organizational infrastructure. We have been able to automate our administrative processes to be able to streamline the intake process and serve more businesses more than ever. This grant also has been instrumental in building a robust internal administrative system for us to increase our ability and capacity to access and sustain new funding for future expansion. As a result of this grant, our nonprofit was able to build capacity to serve more small businesses in the immigrant community and nonprofits organization. We are currently serving more than double the number of small businesses than before. We have seen exponential growth in revenue, workforce development in several businesses in our portfolio. We have actually a waiting list of small businesses that need our services. None of this would have been possible without the nonprofit infrastructure grant program. We strongly urge you to invest in us, to invest in our communities, and to support HF 1080. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wanda. Next up, we have Bashara Mohammed. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Vice Chair Brand and committee members. My name is Bishara Mohammed, and I am the Civic Engagement Manager for Reviving the Islamic Sisterhood of Empowerment, RISE, located in Minneapolis since 2016, where I support Muslim women in Minnesota to engage in every part of the political process. The nonprofit infrastructure grant program has helped us in three crucial ways. First, we were able to add capacity to our team with consultants to support us in our strategic planning for the next 3 years. They helped us determine what evaluation methods were feasible for us to measure the gaps in our organization. This also created a strong framework for us to create thriving programming such as our economic empowerment series and our financial literacy program. We also had external financial experts support us to help us with technical assistance to organize and process our finances and our accounting. And finally, this grant has helped us build our organizational infrastructure to sustain our internal capacity and to build upon our organizational systems and processes. The impact of this of the non-profit infrastructure grant program is that is transformational for our organization in that it takes care of the basic needs of small culturally specific nonprofits such as ours. We know that programs and services and the services we offer to our communities are heavily needed. When the basic foundations of our nonprofits are taken care of, such as the sustainability of the organizational infrastructure and capacity, our communities thrive. This is exactly what the nonprofit infrastructure grant program has done for us. We are able to exist because of this grant, and our communities are prosperous because of RISE and the work we do. We strongly ask all of you to support House File 1080 so that nonprofit organizations such as ours can continue to have the greatest impact and contribute to empowering Minnesota's vibrant communities. Thank you so much.
Next, we'll go to member testimony. First on the list is Representative Breyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Sensenmura, for bringing this forward. I really appreciate this program because there are so many challenges. When you're a small group of people with a great idea, it can be very hard to get it off the ground in a way that's sustainable. So, Ms. Farah, thank you. And especially Ms. Wanda and Ms. Mohammed for sharing the experiences of your organization. I took a moment during the testimony to look at the QR code, and there are a lot of organizations on there that I've either worked with, gotten to know, or have just heard of, and I was really pleased to see the reach and the scope. So I mostly just wanted to offer my thanks and appreciation for the work you're doing and offer my support.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question I think I have for Ms. Farah. This is a unique organization that actually re-grants for other nonprofits. I've been very involved in the ORAC, as members have heard, and the complexities about doing grants. We do a lot of granting in our committee and our council. And it's a lot of work, and I guess my question is, you've got the position of capacity building director, and that is huge today in a world that everybody is looking at how are we giving our money away. This is an enormous ask. It is going up five times what it has been for your organization before. Help us members understand what is your how is your processing? Do you use deed re-granting rules? Do you kind of have a simplified manner? Because we're all under the closeful watch of some nonprofits that have not done well, right? How do you plan on sort of addressing that big requirement to make sure that the money is really going to where it's supposed to go? Because this is such a larger increase than what you've had before.
Ms. Farr.
Thank you, Vice Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker. Yes, and I acknowledge the concern of nonprofit funding and what we have experienced in our state. NIGP has been existing for the last 6 years, and we follow very rigorous and grant management. We are strictly following the exact same processes that DEED follows us, holds us to accountable to all of the grantees. And this program has been successful because we essentially see it as an opportunity for organizations to receive the support they need to build their infrastructure, to be able to receive grants and apply grants through state agencies. This is a readiness, a pathway readiness for this small culturally specific nonprofits, and we essentially hold them to the highest standard that they will be held at any other state agency grant system, a grant opportunity they receive. And thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for that question, Representative Baker. Just to clarify, you know, that this would be the fourth biennium that this program would receive funding, and last biennium it received $2 million. So this is it's a three times increase, you know, which is still significant. The second thing I want to say is, you know, I'm pretty familiar with the work of Propel. They're a very large, reputable organization in the Twin Cities that does a lot of support for nonprofits. Previous to my time in the legislature, I was the executive director of a nonprofit. I had a chance to go through some of their kind of financial leadership, financial management, accounting programs. It was by far the best training that I got as an executive director. A lot of people, I think, as, you know, Representative Ryer talked about, a lot of people come into nonprofits because they have a passion for the mission, the same way that a lot of people, you know, start small businesses because they have a passion for the product that they're selling, not necessarily because they come with the financial management skills that are needed. And so this program and the capacity building that they do is really essential to making sure that our nonprofits can be successful, which is what, you know, I know everyone on this committee wants. But, you know, it's challenging when you come in and all of a sudden you're managing a variety of different funding streams and you don't have any experience doing so. So Propel has a lot of tried and true methods, trainings that they give that I think really, you know, support our nonprofits with kind of the backbone that they need to be successful and to, you know, to make sure that those dollars are going to the place they need to.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just a follow-up.
Real quick.
Yep. Thank you. And again, I appreciate that. I just know that with our ORAC Council as well, we are trying desperately try to simplify our granting process because it is clunky, but it's hard. It's not easy to do. I'd love to have some follow-up with the organization just to kind of help understand. I might be able to learn some things what you're doing too with our opioid council. So thank you for that. Again, I just know that it's a lot of work and there's a lot of eyeballs on us right now. So appreciate all you're doing. Thank you so much for that. Thanks.
Quick closing, Representative.
Yeah, you know, I'll just say I spoke a little bit about the previous role that I had as executive director of a nonprofit. You know, we were small. We had 6 employees. We had a budget of about $500,000. We served, you know, over 2,000 students a year with free literacy programming. And my last day of the job, I was training our new executive director. And, you know, he was just asking, who does HR? Who does accounting? Who takes care of the maintenance of the building? You know, and I had to say to him, you do all of those things, right? The amount of things that we ask our small nonprofits to do while really, you know, showing up and serving the community, it's a lot. And they need support, and they need support both in terms of, you know, funding, dollars going out to them, which this program does, but they also need capacity building support. We need to build up their leadership skills. We need to make sure that they know how to manage the funding that they get. And I think that this program has a track record of doing just that. And I ask for support from the committee for possible inclusion of the omnibus. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Sensenmura. I move that House File 1080 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Next. Chair Hassan, back to the testifier stand. House File 1518. I move that House File 1518 be laid over for possible inclusion. And Chair Hassan, please speak to the committee about American Indian OIC funding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You guys are making me work for this today. I got to move around. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the opportunity to present House File 1518, which is the funding for American Indian OIC. The last few years, my district and my city have been through a lot with the murder of George Floyd, the civil unrest that followed, and the pandemic. There were a lot of chaos and uncertainties on what's going on with our community. American Indian OIC was an entity that was on the ground in the midst of all this chaos. American Indian OIC was founded in 1979 as a workforce development agency that provides education, training and human services in a culturally rich environment. There are no-cost training, job training and career service program, as well as adult basic education GED and high school, GED / high school and wraparound services, and to empower participants to move to economic independence. Each year they serve over 800 community members. More than 80% of those community members are from the BIPOC communities. More than 90% live at or below the 200% federal poverty level. Clients typically have had limited work history, and many need GED or occupational credentials before they advance their career. I'm proud to say this is in my district. It's in the heart of my district, and I have the pleasure of knowing Dr. Joe Hoppett, who works, who is the executive director, who has done tremendous work in this specific community and in this specific organization, and he's here with us to give us more info about this entity, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hoppett, please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Dr. Joe Hoppett, American Indian OIC. How matakiwape? Hihani la shinwashte, omachiape, shunkmanatuse, tokia, hiaye. I greet you in my family's language of Lakota, and we are proud citizens of the Standing Rock Nation. And I say good morning. In my Lakota name, he leads like a wolf, my English name, Dr. Joe Hoppett, and I have the distinct pleasure and honor of serving at the American Indian OIC with an incredibly talented team doing vital work for our community. And Representative Hassan opened up, she hit the nail right on the head. We have had a rough go of it from the pandemic and the recovery that is now underway. What we are observing is that we see whiz-bang numbers about the unemployment rate here in the state of Minnesota. Our community tends to be the lagging indicator, so we usually are about three times the size of the unemployment rate or not in the labor force. And so our services are absolutely critical in this area. Adding to that is what makes our organization unique is we're essentially a one-stop shop. So not only do we provide employment services and employment placement services, but we provide those critical training components, not only for career contextualized training so they have skill sets to get jobs, but many of our clients don't have the secondary educational credentials as well, particularly either high school diplomas or a GED. This funding is critical keystone funding that is supported by additional revenue streams that our organization pulls in. So this affords us the opportunity to provide the trainings, the employment placements, or the candidate refinement, and then the employment placements. And it is supported by the other revenue streams that allow for barrier reduction. That includes a whole host of activities from child care support to transportation support to even rental assistance. And these sources are pulled in from the philanthropic community as well as federal and county and city avenues as well. We braid them together to provide a holistic continuum of services for our clients. This particular revenue stream is critical because it allows for the training and the educational components followed by the employment placement. The trainings that we offer are within market viable fields. As we have the numbers that you've been shared with, we see a beginning surge in these trainings that as we emerged from the pandemic, we had about roughly 130 or so enter into these trainings, and that's already been eclipsed this year, and it's continuing to increase as we see hits within our pre-enrollment phase. We have more folks coming in. I think that's an acknowledgement that the environment is safe to return to, as well as the needs that are ever growing within this current economy. The trainings we offer in the market viability really are in the manufacturing sector, as well as in IT services and in the healthcare administrative support areas. We do a little bit of direct healthcare. We have a phlebotomy class that has just recently been opened up within the past year and a half that has been taken off with great excitement. So while they pursue the career trainings, many are also enrolled within our adult basic education services. And this takes twofold. Either they're pursuing their GED, which is absolutely critical to accompany the career trainings as well as building their credentials, or which some folks may not realize, but adult basic education, and the word basic I loathe, but is also academic supports for those that already have a GED or already have a high school diploma. So as they're getting their career trainings and getting placed within the field, many of our participants are also seeking post-secondary enrollment. And so with the ABE program allows for test preparation or additional remedial help within those academic services. This is the real kind of impact of our one-stop shop going forward. So you know, as a one-stop shop, as the full suite of services, we really want to position ourselves to meet the need that's coming in, this incoming surge, as we continue to recover a little bit behind the rest of the state of Minnesota, but the important needs of recovery for our community as well in the Phillips neighborhood. But many of our community members also co-locate. They return back to their tribal homelands in northern Minnesota. We have a partnership with the Northwest Indian Community Development Center, where our ABE program has a satellite site operating up there, so they can begin their journey in Bemidji, and if they move down to the cities looking for work, they can continue and complete. We also have partnerships in St. Paul as well with the American Indian Family Center. So with that, I would like to say to Mr. Chair and the committee, Wopalatanka, a great thank you for allowing me to testify, and of course for the Akichita Wia, our warrior woman, our fierce advocate, Representative Hassan Wopalatanka, for your continued support of our organization.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard, for your testimony. Now we'll go to member discussion. Chair Becker-Pitt.
Thank you, Chair Brandon. I just wanted to lift up for the record some of the things that are in the handout. Because I always read the handouts, but I realize folks at home and, you know, for the record, we might not realize it. But, you know, following graduation, career education students in your programs increase their annual earnings by an average of 66%. I think that's a really telling statistic in that, you know, those are folks who otherwise may be using other government supports and programs, and this is lifting them out of needing to rely on those things by giving them the tools and the skills to you know, have good paying jobs. Also the construction and logistics training that you do, I think, is also pretty unique. You know, a lot of the programs that we talk about in this space, you know, healthcare fields, administrative, which you do those as well, but I think the construction piece is also something that's really unique. And finally, that high school students are 40% more likely to graduate with your supports. I think that's another really key thing that we should be talking about. I had actually written down, I was going to ask you, but you touched on it at the very end, and just wanted to really, I don't know if folks realize sort of how often folks from our tribal communities kind of move back and forth from our urban Indian centers in Minneapolis back and forth to their tribal communities, as often jobs and housing dictate. But I think if you could just say a little bit more about that, because I think that's key. You know, we often ask questions in this committee, oh, does this only benefit people in the metro? Well, it doesn't. And I think also just the way that our people have always been, we've always sort of been able to move as needed. You know, our ancestors, it was probably more based on food and subsistence, but you know, that's very common in our communities for folks to move back and forth. And so I was wondering if you'd say a little bit more about that and the work that you're doing in the Bemidji area.
Absolutely. Bonjour, Representative Becker-Finn. Absolutely correct. What we see is, you know, in accordance with our traditional teachings and practices, we have strong familial ties. In the Lakota language, we refer to it as Teoshpe, or our extended family. So many times we have our students will begin their academic journeys or their career journeys at American NYC, and then something will occur with their families. Maybe an auntie is sick, they need to go home, and they return to northern Minnesota. We don't want them to exit their training or this pathway. So by having these partnerships in greater Minnesota, particularly in Beltrami County with Northwest Indian Community Development Center, they're there ready to receive them, and they can continue on. And the inverse is true. They may be beginning their pathways, looking at the economic opportunities in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. They're not quite ready to move, or maybe they're looking to shore up some family institutions and move in with a cousin who's living down here. But we don't want them to delay their entry into their training or into their educational acquisition of these secondary credentials, so they begin at Northwest Indian Community Development Center and then move down here. So not only are they able to transition to meet where these economic opportunities are available, they can still honor and respect their cultural competencies and key teachings and traditional practices of being tied to their families and being to support their extended families in this way. So in reality, this investment is a co-investment both in the metropolitan area as well as in outstate Minnesota, and really meeting the needs of the people as they are you know, issued and expressed. And so I think that this is an absolutely critical factor and actually a very unique situation for our organization and our community.
Quick follow-up.
Yes, real quick.
Yep, thank you, Chair. And I think that is really important, because often folks want to live in our tribal communities, but they can't get the job skills that they need to fill the jobs that need to
exactly
be filled. And so I just, that's super important. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Quick closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We, you know, often ask nonprofits to do big with small. We give them small funding, but we ask them to do big. And it's one of those nonprofits that is located at the heart of Franklin Avenue, where there is encampments around, where there are, you know, people who would just randomly, I don't think the executive director shared, people would randomly show up because they are hungry, they are cold, and the space that American Indian OIC is located. So this is a great program and a great support to a community that really needs it. I ask for your support, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Hassan. I move that House File 1518 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, we have 10 minutes left, and then we have to get out for the next committee. So I want to move quickly that we have House File 1165, Twin Cities Rise Performance Grant Funding, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Hassan, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to be very quick. House File 1165 is the funding for Twin Cities Rise. So you guys know Twin Cities Rise has shared a successful partnership with the state since 1995, taking part in the in shaping the to pay performance grant legislation, which means the state doesn't pay for staff or activities. It only pays for when Twin Cities Rise places someone in a meaningful employment and they remain in that employment for at least 1 year. I know we're very short on time, so I'm going to let people who are much more, intelligent than I am explain this more.
Thank you very much, Representative Hassan. First testifier is Emma Corey. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan. Also, Chair Zhang, who is not here, and committee members and staff, thank you for your support. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Emma Corey, President and CEO of Twin Cities Rise. It is an honor for me to represent an organization that I have deep respect for. It is my privilege to have two of my staff here who are not just staff of Twin Cities Rise, but they are also past graduates. One-fourth of our staff, that is our goal, and we're very close to that, one-fourth of our staff are past graduates, lived experience impacting the experience of those that walk in our doors today. Twin Cities Rise is a small but mighty nonprofit in the heart of North Minneapolis, and it is focused on transforming the lives of those impacted by racial or socioeconomic barriers, and we do this through personal empowerment, career training, and meaningful employment with workers, with employers that share our values, share our mission. Today we are here to talk about the pay for performance bill. And when I think about this program, there are three things that I want to highlight. Number one, that pay for performance has been in play for 27 years. Started with Twin Cities Rise back in 1997. We only get paid, as Representative Hassan said, when we actually place and we are able to retain and one of our candidates in that job. And we also are looking for an increase in salary, increase in earnings, focuses on financial independence. Accountability is that first piece. So again, focusing on performance. The second is on second chances. Twin Cities Rise has a deep history of serving those coming out of incarceration, those who may have already given up hope. But we believe that that is a community that we can make the most impact with. Prince Corbett came to our doors 2 weeks after coming out of incarceration. He is today a equity coordinator at Ramsey County and was just named 2022 Bush Fellow. We are very, very proud. We walk alongside our candidates and we walk alongside them for the long haul. We are looking at financial independence for them. We are looking at staying in that job and growing in that job, and you'll hear today. Personal empowerment. Twin Cities Rise core value, what we are based and founded on, is that whatever, however serious the barriers that a candidate is facing, with the right supports and based
in personal empowerment, that person with us, alongside us, can achieve financial independence. All of our four programs focus on diesel tech, facilities and maintenance, call center customer service, my road to success. I don't want to take any more time because you must hear from Quentin and Kirsten here.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Kirsten Mitchell. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Kirsten Mitchell. Thank you, Chair Brand, Representative Hassan, and committee. What brought me to Twin Cities Rise is doing nursing for 20 years, and I became exhausted working through COVID, not knowing which opportunity I could take after that, having done nursing for 20 years. I proceeded on with the My Road to Success program with Twin Cities Rise. It allowed me to have 21st century skills. It allowed me to obtain a career, and emotional intelligence is part of the program where it allows you to have it allows you to deal with core values. So now I feel like I'm empowered to have a new career. At the time, I didn't feel like I had any options. I was burned out. But Twin Cities Rise has had a major impact on my life, being a single parent and losing my son's father. The support that I have obtained from them has been tremendous. So now I'm an employee at Twin Cities Rise, and I get to share my experience. I get to encourage other people that there's hope, and that they do have options. Thank you, Chair and Committee.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we have Quentin Osgood. Please state your name.
My name is, Quentin Osgood. Thank you, Chair Brand and Representative Hassan. Being a graduate of Twin Cities Rise, I came to Twin Cities Rise because of what Twin Cities Rise does. Twin Cities Rise seeks to transform lives of those impacted by racial or socioeconomic barriers through personal empowerment, career training, and meaningful employment. I am an individual whose life has been transformed. I came to Twin Cities Rise with 26 years of criminal activity. I was abused verbally and physically. I was whipped with extension cords and told that I wasn't done and I'd never be anything as an adult. So I had issues that I didn't even know I had issues because I excelled in sports. I even went to the Olympic trials, went to high school, state, and wrestling, football. But I was looking for something that I didn't know that I already had. I had just gotten married, so I came to Twin Cities Rise, and my wife works in a law firm, so I had to get a job. So Twin Cities Rise helped me to realize that I am somebody. They helped me to realize that I'm lovable, that I'm important, that I'm valuable. And if I believe those things, then I would have an empowered life. Well, that's actually lovable, important, valuable, and empowered is the acronym to LIVE. Twin Cities Rise is helping individuals to be productive citizens in society. We're helping individuals to transform their lives because going through what I went through, I had no confidence. I didn't believe I was lovable, important, valuable, but you know, you go to the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. So I stayed with the program and then coming to the program, I realized what was going on, and I started to have confidence and started to believe in myself. And I found a job, but I stayed with Twin Cities Rise because we work with you lifelong. And Twin Cities Rise offered me a position. I said, no. You get a coach to work with you? I said, oh, no, I don't want to be a community outreach coordinator, a recruiter talking to people. And then they helped me to go to my IDP and reminded me, oh, this is what you said you wanted. It's right here before you. Have the confidence to step into it. And I'm now the second longest standing employee at Twin Cities Rise. I've been a part of Twin Cities Rise 20 years, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Members, any discussion on the bill? Okay. Chair Hassan, please bring it home.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I know we're very short on time. As you have seen the testimony of folks who have testified, this is a good program. Please support the bill. Thank you.
All right. I renew my motion, rather, that House Bill 1165 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Members, I just wanted to quickly point out that the next week's agenda has already been posted online. I look forward to great discussions next week about how we can continue to do, of course, do what we did today, help our workforce in Greater Minnesota and across the state. Without any further comments, meeting adjourned.